Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
All right, 405. Mick Monagle here with you in the afternoon, filling in for Evan and Tiki on this Labor Day Friday. That's right. The end of summer is near. My vacations are over, as the great Eddie Scazzeri always would say. Next time you're off, see you at Thanksgiving. We're going to battle through this football season, but we still do have a baseball season. We're going to take a couple calls here on some football. I still got some calls on the line. I don't want to leave you guys hanging, so we're still going to take your Giant calls, your Jet calls for a little bit. We are going to transition to baseball a little bit as we get closer to the games, and I do have a Yankee lineup. We will give it to you this segment, I promise. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Chris in Monmouth County. What's up, Chris?
Yo, Big Mac, how are you, man?
Yo, what's up, man? How are you?
Good to hear your voice. I had a question for you.
Thank you.
You know, of course, Daniel Jones.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned about Dable and he wants to develop his own quarterback and whatnot, and I get it, right? Like, this is it for Jones. And I agree with you on Saquon. I can close my eyes and not think of a great Saquon play. Maybe there's two. Yeah, I think you're right. It's gone for him. But does Dable want to draft a young quarterback and then be responsible for this guy because he's not performing like a lot of these young hot quarterbacks come out, and then his job's on the line? I don't know. I think the Giants are in a predicament with they don't want Jones anymore. It's clear. Dable doesn't like the guy, but he did have time to develop him. If he gets this young quarterback and can't develop him, he's out. What's the play there?
Yeah, I mean, he's out now. What's he going to do? Like, you know, you actually lead it in. Let me get into it real quick, Chris, and thank you for the call. I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to let you go, though. You lead me into the Dable conversation about whether or not he's on the hot seat, because that's been, like, kind of bandied about. And I know, Connor Hughes was on with Moose yesterday and pointed this out and talked about that Brian Dable believes he's coaching for his job. And I thought, you know, part of it, because you mentioned about drafting and developing a young quarterback, and I mentioned this a bunch prior to the draft, that I feel like that helps keep his job. Because if you draft and begin the process of developing a young quarterback, they just saw what happened when you mess with coaches during the development of Daniel Jones. The owner came out and said we ruined him, the amount of coaches we gave him. So if they were to draft a young quarterback, that secures his job for 2 or 3 years because he's allowed to develop the young quarterback. Like, that's a 2-year or 3-year plan for Brian Dable. How many years do you think he has to just lose with Daniel Jones? What? Or, you know, not play well with Daniel Jones, or lose with whoever quarterback not drafted or whatever. Like, how many years he gets of losing? And I understand that the owner is tired of the instability of the organization. And if he had his druthers, that he would be wanting and willing to keep this tandem together for long term because he believes in it. And they did show promise, the first real promise this franchise has shown in the last decade, a couple years ago. And I do think Dable's a good head coach. And I'm looking forward to him calling plays because I think that was a big thing for him. Because whatever was going on with Kafka, there was a lot of turmoil inside. Like, he was getting angry. That we all know what happened with him. He was getting angry with the play calling. He was getting angry with the offense. He was yelling. He wasn't providing answers. And there's two ways to deal with that. One, try to improve yourself. Or two, eliminate the problem. And he was calling plays with Buffalo. We've seen Diggs come out and talk about what a great play caller he felt Brian Dable was. Call the plays. That was very Seinfeld-esque. It sounded like, call the plays. I'm excited to have him call the plays. I think that's what he's here for. He's an offensive coach. Be the offensive coach. I love it. But developing a young quarterback helps him stay. It doesn't hurt him. Sure, if he fails after 3 years, you get fired. You think Brian Dable has 3 years? Whether or not you think he's on the hot seat right now, and I think he's more on the hot seat than people will lead you to believe, or people want to believe. How many years does he have of losing? This is year 3. And year 2 was much worse than year 1. And that's what I'll say about his head coaching job. I don't think he's on the hot seat where there's a playoff mandate, necessarily. But could I see a set of circumstances that lead to Brian Dable not being the head coach of this team? Absolutely. And does it have to be as dramatic as 1 or 2 wins? No. It doesn't have to be that dramatic. Sure, if they don't win a game, all right. Well, I mean, clearly any coach, if the team falls apart and starts infighting and everything else, and they win one or two games, sure, then no coach would survive that. So any coach is theoretically, for the most part, on the hot seat as that goes. I don't think it has to be that dramatic. You forget. Like, what came out of last year? Last year, there was a lot of infighting and inner turmoil, and a defensive coordinator who, whatever you think, and I think they made the right move firing him and getting rid of him and allowing Dable to be the leader of the team. He has to be. He's the head coach. And they don't have Aaron Rodgers. They don't have Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning at the quarterback position. He is the leader of the team, and he has to be. And if you've got a defensive coordinator who, for whatever reason, whether it was because he was interviewed for the head coaching job himself a couple times, or whether or not he felt he was the better coach than Dable, or whatever the case may be, or he was as more important to winning in the previous year than Dable was, whatever the reason, and you have underlings of that coordinator, you know, giving out secrets to the media, and you feel like the coach is being undermined, he's got to go. But that doesn't change what happened with this team. And you've got him screaming on the headset. You've got him going after his offensive coordinator, giving him play calling, taking away play calling, giving him play calling, taking away play calling, infighting with the defensive coordinator. This is a staff they hired. And he was unable to keep, not only that, they lost. And even when they won, they did it without offense, and he's an offensive head coach. Are you telling me an offensive head coach who hasn't shown a bit of offense, as much as I like him, and what he was able to, the culture he was able to bring year one, and just the difference of the wave of confidence and competence, excuse me, that's the word I was looking for, the wave of actual competence that, like, rushed over the organization compared to what it's been the 4 years prior, sure, I get that. And I think Dable's a good head coach. I think he can be. But you're telling me that there is no way a head coach who was brought here to be an offensive guru, who's come over here, and even with the winning, they did it more defensively and just handing the ball off to Saquon Barkley, who, by the way, isn't here anymore. This offensive coordinator, head coach, doesn't have to show offense? If this team wins 5-6 games, seven games, but they do it defensively, or this offense still stinks? Now, it's going to be hard to win that many games, but let's just say, because I think most people think, even if he wins 6 games like last year, 5 or 6 games, that depending on how it looks, you know, they like stability, they're not going to fire this head coach. If this team, who fixed the offensive line, who now has a young wide receiving core better than it's ever been, and a number one wide receiver for Daniel Jones, which he's never had, they went out and traded for a pass rush. But honestly, if this offense stinks, if they continue to be unable to score points, if they continue to get bum-rushed at home by the likes of the Seattle Seahawks or obviously the Dallas Cowboys, whoever else came into that building and kicked their ass, you're telling me if they win 5 or 6 games on sheer luck and the offense still stinks, even with the improvements they made, that this head coach isn't on the hot seat? I disagree. This offense has got to do something. They paid the quarterback, and I do think that tandem. I think Joe Shane and Brian Dable are sync together. I don't know if you can fire one without firing the other. So you're going to tell me this group went out and paid the quarterback, allowed the owner's favorite player and the fan base's favorite player, and Saquon Barkley, to leave. Whether I agree with it or not, this is the owner thinking. Allowed their best player, most productive offensive player, to leave, paid the quarterback instead, drafted the wide receiver, got another young draft pick in Wandell Robinson, another young draft pick in Hyatt, have this wide receiving core that everybody's talking about, a number one stud wide receiver at LSU, the wide receiver factory. They improve the offensive line, finally, right? They, after botching a first-round pick in Neal, they go out in free agency and try and help this offensive line. They do all that, and the offense still stinks? Brian Dable doesn't have to show anything offensively to keep his job? I'm sorry. I think he does. I think he does. Not only, it's not about winning. They don't have to win 9-10 games, make the playoffs. They have to show some competence on offense. They have shown none. None. Even in the winning. Let's be honest. even in the winning, barring the last game of the season against the Colts and then the playoff game against Minnesota. And I get it. That was a road playoff game. I'm not diminishing that. That happened. It was the best game the Giants have played since the Super Bowl. It was a great day. I loved watching every second of it. Daniel Jones played brilliantly. They didn't just win it defensively. They went out there and put up points, scored. They had a great game offensively. I can really look at two games, the last game of the year against the Colts and that playoff game, where the offense actually did something. This head coach is going to need more than two offensive games to show me something, to show this owner something, to secure his job. Because as much as you want stability, you've got to see production. You've got to see it come. This is year three. So do I think he's getting fired? No, because I do think the offense is going to be better. And I do think they're going to win some games. And I do think he's a good coach who they believe in. So what do I think happens? I think they win 6-7 games and Brian Daboll's here next year. Do I think that's a guarantee? Do I think this coach has to show me something offensively? Do I have to think that he has to figure out a way to scheme up ways to make neighbors a legitimate threat in this league and to have Daniel Jones actually look like a quarterback? And to have this offensive line actually block someone? You bet your ass he better show some of that. Because you can't have a promising year one, a miserable year two, and a miserable year three. You don't get year fours in this league. So I think it's very plausible that this coach is coaching for his year, for his career, as a Giant head coach. Absolutely I do. That's why I was trying to pitch that to him if he was listening to me at 4 o'clock in the morning, like I know so many of you do. That's why I was pitching drafting a quarterback, because it gives you the 3 years. You draft, if you would have drafted J.J. McCarthy, you're locked in. Locked in. You got 3 years to make J.J. McCarthy work. Now, if he doesn't, you're on your ass, and it hurts you on the next job. At least if he goes out and goes to try and get hired, he could say, well, Daniel Jones was thrusted upon me. That's the selling. That you should still have faith in me. Look what I did with Josh Allen in Buffalo. I was giving Daniel Jones. It didn't work out. But if you draft a quarterback, your guy, and you can't make it work, now you don't have that selling point. But you do get to keep your job longer. And I do think the Giants head coach is on some sort of, like at the press conference the other day, he was asked, you know, the owner said they need to see margin, they need to see improvement. What does that mean? And Joe Shane kind of got, well, you have to ask him. I don't know. We all know it's not a playoff mandate. This offense has been atrocious for forever. Forever. This offensive head coach and this GM who went out and tried to attack the wide receiver room and the offensive line and was willing to allow their best offensive player to leave better show some more offensively if they want to keep their jobs. 888-808-1019. Pablo in Dover. What's up, Pablo?
Hey, Mac, my friend. How are you today?
Good, man. How are you?
Look, awesome, man. First off, Giants, I think you're one of the best listeners on the radio, but I respectfully disagree with you in regards to Daboll. I think anything south of four wins, which we would agree, is just a dumpster fire. He's fine. I think if you look at the collective body of work, he's basically under 500. But you can argue with one of the worst rosters in football. Granted, you know, he inherited most of it, but no number one receiver his right. entire career as a Giant. Offensive line, we know the story behind that. And look, I've never been sold on Daniel Jones. I think a lot of Giant fans can agree with that. I think it is what it is. They put themselves in the corner by not picking up his fifth year, not handling all that stuff correctly, but he's not the answer. And I think most Giant fans are prepared for what happened to Russell Wilson last year. I can see him 7-8 games getting benched. And then at this point, you got to give that regime the chance to get their quarterback. I know outside of Evan Neal, I think the drafts have been solid. The return's still early to tell, but I feel like there's a plan in place. I've seen enough from Daboll where, again, if it's 5-6 win season, but we're having Tommy DeVito or Drew Lock out there, I think we have to give this regime the chance to get the quarterback because I see the pieces, neighbors, the O-line. It's coming together. It just requires patience, man. You can't win without a quarterback. That's the rule of the game.
Yeah, listen, I don't agree with you, and I think you're 100% right. That's the other thing, and I've mentioned it a bunch. I didn't mention it today in the Daniel Jones discussion. But, yeah, no, the idea that he better win quickly. He doesn't have all year. That's the different. That's the thing, too, because I don't know. I can't tell you for sure. right? I don't know for sure how Joe Shane would handle it, but I would think if he's smart and considering how Daniel Jones has been injured every year and ended two of the last three seasons. He's ended two of the last three seasons on season-ending IR. If he does that this year, the money's guaranteed next year. He can't, like, if they're 2-5, why would you continue to play Daniel Jones and take that risk of him getting hurt, which he does every year? Why would you do that? And guarantee locking into that money and having no option at quarterback position? You can't. So not only does Daniel Jones have to play well, he's got to play well right away. Because if the Giants lose, they're not, you're 100% right. They're going to look to bench him. They're going to look to bench him. So, but I hear what you're saying about the coach. And if that happens, if they take his quarterback away from him, then I guess you're right. I guess that's a, if they go to DeVito or they go to Locke, you know, week six, because they're losing and Daniel Jones isn't worth the risk of being locked into his money, and you take away Dable's quarterback from him. I suppose that, how could you argue that you've given him a chance to be successful or show you anything? But that gives him 6 weeks too. Like, this offense has to be better. Like you just said, he's never had an offensive line. Well, apparently they've helped fix it this year. He's never had a number one wide receiver. He's got a number one wide receiver. Like, the offense needs to show something. Dable doesn't get to coach this team, no matter how much of an overall good head coach we think he is. He's an offensive coach. He can't come here and not impact the offense. And you want to tell me he did year one? I worked for the Giants radio that year, and I did a lot of stuff on the field. I was on the field for, I think, almost every home game. I saw games against the Chicago Bears that you wanted to claw your eyes out. The opening game against the Panthers. The opening home game against the Panthers 2 years ago, if they didn't fumble twice in the red zone, the Giants don't score points. The Texans were driving down the field to beat them. And they made two interceptions late in the game off Mills to save their bacon, and they needed to hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley 40-plus times to beat the Texans. That team wasn't very good offensively, even though they won the games they won and made the playoffs, and then did eventually play their two best. I don't want to diminish that, because it's true. They did play two very good offensive games against the Colts at the end of the year, and then clearly in Minnesota. And then what happened in Philadelphia? We all know what happened in Philadelphia. But that season wasn't an offensive season. They weren't good. Daniel Jones didn't throw touchdown passes and do anything.
How many Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Years does this coach get of not being offensively productive in any way? Now, again, I think he's going to be. But the idea that he's locked into his job, I don't know. I don't know. Let's go to Justin real quick before the break. Justin and Dobbs Ferry. What's up, Justin?
Hey, what's going on? Like you said, I was super excited about Dable coming in and his offense, and Kafka, you know, kind of put something into that. So now him coming out with those four wide receivers, I think they're better than the receivers that the Jets have, and they hype the Jets up. I think if you go toe-to-toe with Neighbors against Wilson, and now, you know, Wandell Robinson can move the ball. Darius Slayton had 6 touchdowns the last 2 years. Garrett Wilson had 7 touchdowns the last 2 years. So I think you get Dable into this offense, you get a good offensive line, give him some time, and be able to slow the ball down the field, which Dable did with Josh Allen. I think we're going to see a whole different offense this year.
I think it's plausible. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm saying it better. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying Dable's... But I agree with you. I do think that they are going to be much better offensively. They better be. Like, there's no excuse not to be. Now, I don't know if they'll be a legitimately, you know, top half of the league offense, but they better show more ability, and Neighbors better be making plays and scoring touchdowns, and Daniel Jones better be finding the football. And, you know, there's a fine line. I know he didn't turn the ball over 2 years ago, but he also didn't take chances. You got to ride that line. He's got to take some chances, and he's got to avoid throwing as many interceptions as he has when he's taking chances. Like, but no doubt, I believe in Brian Dable, and I'm excited that he's calling plays. I think he should be calling plays. I think Kafka's been a pretty good offensive coordinator. I know the rest of the league has thought so. He's gotten back-to-back years of multiple head coaching interviews, even though he hasn't been able to snag a job. And I'm sure he did a fine job, and I'm not blaming him in any way. But Brian Daboll, as the head coach, has things he's got to learn. And he's got positives and negatives, as all coaches do. And one of the negatives was he was unable to move on from a play that didn't work, or he was yelling, and he was taking plays away. Like, this is all reported. I wasn't in the room. I'm not on the headset. This has been reported. And if he was unable to get it together and not be able to scream and yell and hinder the actual play calling that's going on, there's two ways to go about it. One is to dramatically change yourself and learn how to live with it and grow and change, which is a would have been a plausible route. Or the other is to eliminate your problem and just take over the damn thing. And I'd rather just have him eliminate the problem and take over the damn play calling instead of trying to adapt and change in year one when he knows. You want to know a sign of how the coach feels about it? If he's coaching for his job, he took over the play calling. He's got a respected offensive coordinator who he's worked with for years, who's getting head coaching interviews left and right. And he took the responsibility away from him because he believes he's coaching for his job. So I don't know if I believe it, you believe it, whoever believes it, he believes it. I believe that. So we'll find out, but I'm looking forward. This isn't me being pessimistic. I don't want to play. I'm just saying that it better happen or the coach is in trouble. I think it will. I have confidence in Brian Daboll. I think he's a good head coach. I think he's a good offensive coach, and I'm excited about what this offense can look like. I am. As much as I'm down on Daniel Jones, I believe it can be much better. I don't like the circumstances of Daniel Jones. Not that I don't like Daniel Jones personally. I just don't think he's excellent, and they're already paying him. And I just saw a thing where he's like the third highest salary cap in the sport. He's the third highest hit against the cap in the sport. Like, for a guy who gets as injured as much as he does and is still unproven in year six, I don't think that's a good scenario. That's all I'm saying. But I don't think he's a bum either. And with neighbors and an offensive line, I'm looking forward to what this offense can be. And with Daboll playing, calling plays, I'm looking forward to it. But it's got to happen eventually. Or how long do you go with Brian Daboll? 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. You know, I was talking about with Rosie during the break, and I haven't gotten to it yet. I meant to do it in the open. But what a... I just want to take a second and talk about Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau. And what a... just a horrendous story that is. I mean, if you haven't heard, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, who plays for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and his younger brother, Matthew, were killed last night, you know, riding their bikes. And, you know, Johnny, 31 years old, his brother Matthew, 29, two young children for Johnny. We're just finding out now, I guess, more stories are coming out about this, that Matthew had a, you know, him and his wife were expecting their first child in 4 months. I mean, just an awful, awful story. And to make matters worse, this was supposed to be a day, one of the great days in the Gaudreau family, as they were all in town for the, you know, the wedding of their daughter and Johnny and Matthew's sister. And they were going to be groomsmen, and I think Johnny's wife was supposed to be the maid of honor. And today was supposed to be one of the great days in this family's life. And instead, they're coming to the terms of losing two of their sons who live, you know, really wonderful lives. And not that, you know, all lives are precious, but to have a 31-year-old man and a 29-year-old man living out their dreams, it's just a terrible story. And obviously, you know, the driver of the car who hit him is suspected of being under the influence and has been charged. I just saw a video that he's going to be held for the week in prison because of the holiday weekend and no one being around. I mean, just a horrible tragedy. And one of those things that are just a gut punch when you see the story. It's just, it makes you sick. And you don't have to be a father to feel as sick as most of us do, but, you know, having a son, being a father of two boys specifically, it's just a horrendous story. A young kid, obviously they're native of New Jersey, a top line center, that like that matters, but just an incredible talent, an incredible player, an incredible person, a young father, and a family member of someone who is supposed to be celebrating today. just, I mean, as awful a story as we've come across in a long time. Just a brutal, brutal, brutal thing. And, you know, not that it needs to be said, but please, I mean, I don't know anything about this guy who got behind the wheel. It's a mistake any of us can make. Don't make it. Don't make it. Because two young men were snuffed out of life, of great lives. And it's just a very, just an unbelievably sad story. And I, you know, I wanted to make sure we just touched on it and send, you know, my thoughts and prayers. And I know we all feel the same way to the Goodreau family who are just dealing with something I can't even imagine. So we'll come back, continue on with the show. I did have to mention that it's a story that, you know, just impacts everyone. And you can't even begin to really comprehend what that family is going through today. So my prayers and my thoughts and all of our collective prayers and thoughts go to the Goodreau family who are just dealing with something it's hard to imagine trying to deal with. So we'll come back after this, continue to take your phone calls on the Giants and the Jets, and we will get to the baseballs. We're getting closer to the games tonight. We'll talk a little bit about the Yankee lineup. I know I've teased that a couple times. I promise you I will pay that off. We'll talk about the Mets and their rebound victory, what it means for the closer, what it means for the playoff race, and how they are about to enter what is the worst situation a baseball team these days can enter. So we'll get to all that next. All right, 441. Mick Monagle here with you. Not in the overnights, but in the afternoon. How about that? I haven't done an overnight in forever. It's been a while now, since back to last two Friday, you know, today's 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago. I was on some vacation, apparently.
How's the sleep schedule been?
Sleep schedule has been great now.
Right.
Been sleeping every night. And I was in Disney, I was out by 9:45. I was exhausted.
Did you golf at any point when you were at Disney? Because I hear they have incredible courses.
Not only did I golf, but I golfed in Florida and I golfed in South Carolina. And both times, I won mini golf by at least 3 strokes.
Look at you, crushing the mini golf course.
Crushing the mini golf. I did not play actual golf, but I played mini golf twice, and I won both times. My children stood no chance.
You took them to the big windmill courses with all that stuff?
No, I don't know. We went to, I stopped in South Carolina to visit my uncle and my aunt. They had both just recently retired there in Myrtle Beach. So we went to Myrtle Beach, and we played at a place that was like Treasure Island, and it was a pirate-themed thing. So there was like a pirate ship.
Right, like a Jersey Shore style mini golf course, lights.
No, it wasn't like legit, like just the hole in front on legit greens or whatever. No, it was like, you know, fun. Hit it over water, hit it into this hole, and it'll go through that and hit to the bottom of the course and roll in, you know, that kind of thing. And then we went to a place, with the booking, I guess, we got a free mini golf game. And we went to this thing called Summer Winter Land, I don't know. And it was like two courses, a summer one and a winter one. Now, both were Christmas-themed, believe it or not. But even the summer one was Christmas-themed, but it was like Christmas in July, Santa on a beach chair and, like, you know, things like that. And both times I won and dominated. So I felt good about that.
I appreciate the fact that you didn't want to let your kids win.
No, I don't want
that.
Listen, when their score is really 35, I'll give them a 6 or something. But I don't, like, you know, because eventually the little guy just starts, like, guiding the ball into the hole. And I'm like, well, that's not really, you shouldn't be doing that.
Right, that's not ideal.
So I let them, you know, I give them a much better score and keep it close. But no, I don't let them win. I'm a bit, like, there are certain things I let them win in and certain things I won't. Like, I'm okay a little bit on video games or things like that. Or, you know, we'll play, like, to kill time a lot online in Disney, we were, like, thumb wrestling. Like, I'll let them win thumb wrestling. And stuff like that. But like when it comes to actual, if we're going to play something, if you want to, let's go play basketball, you want to play one-on-one, you're losing. You want to play mini golf, I'm beating you. Like you have to learn chess. I will never let them win in chess, ever. And they've shown some interest in it, but no. There are certain things I'm okay with and certain things that just, hey, when you get good enough, you can beat me.
No participation trophies in the McMonagle house.
Like, what I'm learning, like, I don't want them, because I've seen it already. Like, they're satisfied with the cheap wins. Like, they know it. I know it. Everyone knows that it's fake. And yet they'll still be like, yay, I won. And I'm like, no. Like, you guys, if you do that and you allow cheap victories to satisfy you, you'll never strive to actually get the real victory. I want them to cherish the moment that they beat my fat ass. Like, they need that.
You know what we call that?
What's
or
that?
At least I call it. Strive for greatness.
Yes.
Accept mediocrity.
Accept mediocrity.
Strive for greatness. Accept mediocrity.
Well, a lot of people think that I accept Yankee mediocrity, so let's turn and talk to the Yankees. A lot of people accuse me of that.
What a wonderful transition
by you.
You
see how that I do that? You see how I do that? Now, if you're going to the game tonight, apparently tonight's giveaway is a big deal. It is the Aaron Judge football jersey. And I've seen pictures. Rosie's telling me a couple people have called in. I've seen the pictures online. The lines to get in are crazy. Because much to Evan Roberts' chagrin, I'm sure it's something like 18,000 or whatever, the first 18,000 people will get these Aaron Judge football jerseys. So if you're going to the game, prepare to wait online because people want these Aaron Rodgers football jerseys. They got the Juan Soto basketball jerseys. I'm sure Keith is there right now. Have you talked to Keith? No. I'm sure Keith is going to get his Aaron Rodgers football jersey. You know that. So, Keith, you know what's funny? I forgot to tell Keith this. This is how much Keith is on top of the giveaways. We went to a game a few weeks ago because my wife saw this, I forget the author's name, I got to look it up, but Mo Williams, something like that. It was a child author who writes these books about a pigeon. And I guess the kids have a couple, or she knows the author. My wife's an English teacher into books and literature and everything. And they were giving away, or what we thought they were giving away, was like this pigeon bobblehead of the character that are in these books. It was Mo Williams Day, whatever the author's name is. I got to look it up. And I texted Keith because I was having trouble getting in touch with the sales department here for the tickets. And I was like, hey, who do you talk to? Blah, blah. And I said, yeah, I'm going tonight because of this giveaway. And Keith's like, I've never heard of that. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. I'm like, oh, well, they're doing this author thing. And he's like, nope, never heard of it. I'm like, oh, okay. Didn't think much of it. And then I go there, and apparently it's like you have to buy a special event ticket and do the, like, it's not just the normal, because we go in there and they don't have anything. And I'm like, where's the pigeon bobblehead? I'm here for the pigeon bobblehead. And the people handing out it was like they were giving out baseball cards. They were giving out baseball cards. And I said, this is great. I love baseball cards. Where's the pigeon? And they were like, nope, no pigeon. I have no idea what you're talking about. I guess go try over there. I'm like, okay. So I went to like four different exits and entrances. No pigeon. And then we went to the customer service department. They're like, oh, no, that's a specialty ticket that you have to buy a special event ticket to get access to the pigeon bobblehead. I'm like, really? Well, who? I saw the event said bobblehead for a pigeon. My wife said, let's go. And I should have known when Keith had no idea what I was talking about that it wasn't a legitimate giveaway. Should have known. That should have been my first tip-off. That Keith McPherson had no idea what I was talking about when it came to the giveaway. Should have been my first tip-off. I went to that game. The Yankees won. It was hot as can be. We had to leave early, plus no pigeon. Very frustrating. The wife was not happy with me. She's texting right now, probably saying, yes, that's right. You tell him, Chris, get me that pigeon. I can't get you the pigeon, honey. I'm sorry. I tried. I don't know what to do. The pigeon, they're probably all gone. It was a very frustrating day. Although the Yankees won. 888. Oh, no. So, yes. The Yankee lineup. The whole thing. Forgot where I was going with that. Got into the pigeon. Almost forgot. Yankee starting lineups are brought to you by Jersey Mike's, the official sub sandwich shop of the New York Yankees, and by Casamigos Tequila. Brought to you by those who drink it. Yankees lineup. Will DJ LeMahieu be in it? Can you tolerate this? Is this a punt lineup? Can you actually turn the game on without disgust this evening? Remember, against the right-handed pitcher tonight against the Cardinals. Leading off, playing second base, Gleyber Torres. Well, what does that tell you right off the bat? Gleyber Torres is the leadoff hitter now. He's really taken it. He's run with it. He's been good over the last month. I know we all hate him. I just saw what the qualifying offer, maybe we can get into this in a second. I just saw what the qualifying offer is going to be next year, around $21 million. There is no way in heck Gleyber Torres gets offered he'll take $21 million for a year. So they are not offering the qualifying offer. I don't want Gleyber back. None of us want Gleyber back, but we have to be honest. He's an integral part of this team. He's been much better since moving to the leadoff spot. He's the leadoff hitter from now on. It's not Verdugo. It is Gleyber Torres hitting leadoff, batting second. Obviously, batting second, playing right field, Juan Soto. Batting third, playing center field, Aaron Judge. Batting cleanup and catching, Austin Wells. And there needs to be more of that. Enough with this. I don't dislike Trevino. I understand why you've played him against some left-handed pitching. Just play Wells. He's established himself as the cleanup hitter. Batting fifth and DHing, Giancarlo Stanton. Batting sixth and playing third base, Jazz Chisholm. Batting seventh and playing shortstop, Anthony Volpe. Batting eighth and playing first base, Ben Rice. So against the right-handed pitching, you do not have to see DJ LeMahieu. Ben Rice is your first baseman. And batting ninth, playing left field, Alex Verdugo. That is your lineup for tonight's game, and obviously a lot has to do with this Yankee lineup, and everybody's upset about the Yankee lineup. Here's my only point. I just want to clarify yesterday. I want to make sure we all understand this. I think the Yankees are wrong to continue to play DJ LeMahieu against left-handed pitching. I do. I think they're wrong. I don't think they're not serious. I don't think they're unserious, as people are saying. I think they still believe it's their best option to get the best team moving forward. I just think they're wrong. I don't think they're punting. I think they're trying to win. I think they're wrong in how they're going about it. But my overall point is, we scream about it in the series, right? We're complaining about how they've played over the way they played against these under 500 teams. And it's funny to me how it's changed significantly. At the beginning of the year, their excellent record was built on beating bad teams. And they can't beat good teams. All they beat is the bad teams. It's a joke. The team's a fraud. They split a series against Seattle. They lost 2 out of 3 against Baltimore. They can't beat good teams. They only beat bad teams. Now, all they beat is good teams. Both ways indicate that they're not good enough to win. If they lose to the good teams, they're not good enough. If they lose to the bad teams, they're not good enough. So pretty much, if you lose any games, you're not good enough. We get it. But if you're looking at how they've played over the last month against lousy teams, it hasn't been good enough. I'll be the first to tell you. You got to win this division. The division is right there to be won, and now the schedule starts to turn, and Baltimore has the easier schedule of the two, and you've squandered your opportunity to get fat against the bad teams. Totally agree. Disaster. They need to start playing better. But my point is, we scream about DJ LeMahieu, and while you're right, DJ LeMahieu shouldn't be playing. But when you lose 2 out of 3 to Washington, and you lose 2 out of 3 to Detroit, and you look at it and you want to scream, like, let's focus on the Washington series. DJ LeMahieu had 4 hits in the series. Now, he is terrible. He hits into a bad double play, but he had a hit in almost, three hits in the series. Juan Soto had 0. Juan Soto had 0. Now, we all love Juan Soto. I'm not suggesting we don't play Juan Soto. He's having a great year. Love him. Need to sign him. All that. But you want to talk about why we're all upset they lost 2 out of 3 to Washington, and we're going to scream about DJ LeMahieu had 3 hits in the series. Juan Soto had 0. They need their best players to play well. And that's what's going to happen in the postseason. We can scream about who plays. It should be Cabrera. It should be this. It should be that. If you want to get into a playoff series, if Juan Soto is going to have 0 hits, it doesn't matter if it's Oswaldo Cabrera or LeMahieu. Now, it should be Oswaldo Cabrera. I'm with you. But you look at the last time they were in the playoffs against the Astros, Judge did nothing. You want to know why the Texas Rangers won the World Series? Corey Seager went nuts. Your best players have to be your best players. So while I agree, and now as the rosters are going to open up, and I want to see Jason Dominguez on this team and hopefully and probably playing over Alex Verdugo. And I want to see Rizzo's going to be back. And I don't want to see DJ LeMahieu playing. I want to see Oswaldo Cabrera instead of DJ LeMahieu in the limited time that you're going to actually see him now that Rizzo's coming back. I agree. But we scream at things and say, this is why they're not serious. And this is why they're losing. And this is why they stink. You want to go into a series, and guess when else Juan Soto didn't have a hit? In the Detroit series. You want to know why they lost against the Nationals? They lost against the Nationals because Gerrit Cole wasn't Gerrit Cole. They lost against the Nationals because Rodon allows a pitch clock, what's the pitch tracker, whatever it's called. I'm losing the thought for it right now. Pitchcom, thank you very much. Pitchcom, don't give me the look. I've said 10 things you have no idea about. Don't give me that you know the pitch comment. I don't.
You have to know that. That's been in the league forever.
I forgot the word. Pitch com, pitch clock, it's all pitches. The pitch com allowed, he allowed that to uproot his entire start. And Juan Soto got zero hits. You want to talk about why they lost? That's why they lost. They didn't lose because Oswaldo Cabrera wasn't playing instead of DJ LeMahieu. You might want to make it that. That might still be a bad decision. It's not why they lost. 888-808-1019. Let's take a quick call before the break. Eric and Ronkonkoma. What's up, Eric?
Hey, C-Mac. You know, well, you touched on it a few minutes ago. I've been following this Johnny Gaudreau thing since it broke, pretty much. It's just, forgive me if I yell because it's a touchy subject for me, but so sad to hear about it. And unfortunately, locally around here where I am, there's been like so many of these incidents just in the last week, and it's just, it annoys me to no end and angers me. It's just, I wish there was some way to implement something to keep it from happening more, but who knows what's going to happen, and the details just keep getting sadder.
No.
But this one is, as you hear it, so.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, Eric, you're right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you can do. But, I mean, as much as, we all know that we got to figure out a way to curtail all the tragedies that happen in this country. There's far too many of them. We don't have to get into every one of them, but we all understand, you know, you got to be smarter than making a decision about getting behind the wheel after drinks. But today, as much as that's an issue and you want to make sure it doesn't happen again, you're heartbroken for the Gaudreau family. I mean, a young kid, two young gentlemen, 31 and 29 years old, one already has two children. The other one has his first child on the way. And today was supposed to be a day of celebration for that family. This is a god-awful story. And it's hard to fathom. It's hard to imagine. It's hard, you know, you try, especially, I think in what I do and what we do here, sometimes, especially with managers and stuff, like you try and put yourself, I end up trying to put myself in people's positions a lot. Like, that, it gets me in trouble sometimes with Aaron Boone. I try and put myself in Aaron Boone's position or Brian Cashman's position or Brian Dable's position. I try and see it through their lenses. It's hard to put yourself in the Gaudreau's family's position right now. It's hard to imagine that. It's just an awful, awful story. And just, you're right, it keeps getting worse as the details come out. So, prayers and thoughts to the Gaudreau family, and hopefully they can find a way to continue on, because that is just a terrible, terrible story. 4:57, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll get back to more of your calls. We'll continue to, you know, yell about the Yankees. Although, you know, a lot of times when things like this happen, it feels trivial to do so, but this is what we do. And also, I got on my wife for texting me about the pigeon. In fact, no, she was correcting me. Apparently, Rosie didn't hear it, but I said the Aaron Rodgers football jersey at Yankee Stadium today. No, it's the Aaron Judge football jersey. When so many Aarons are going around, look at Rosie, this is your job, man. I know you're all by yourself. I know it's just you back there and you're screening phone calls and you're getting ready for the Cinco de Five-O and you're busy back there. But when I'm making a fool of myself going on and on about how it's Aaron Rodgers' football jersey at Yankee Stadium, the least you could do is pick that up. You were all over me for the pitch com. You're there to correct me there. Where's the, hey, buddy, it's Aaron Rodgers. It's Aaron Judge, not Aaron Rodgers. Suck it! It's as good as the answer as you got there. All right, 4:58.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.